Okay, reading from the Jiva Dharma. Let me just see where we're up to. And then, so we're in this chapter 7, Om Gyane Timurandasya, Nitya Dharma and Material Existence. Om Gyane Timurandasya, Jnananjana Shalakaya, Taksur Malatam Yena, Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha, Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam, Tapitam Yena Bhutale, Sayam Rupa Kadamayam, Dati Sapadantikam, Pansha Kalpa Turubhyascha, Vipashindu Baye Vicha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from the Santa Falls. So we're in the dialogue, this wonderful story of different people coming to Krishna consciousness. I explain the same point again, but it's such a nice point. According to where you're coming from when you come in a spiritual path, you require knowledge of various subjects called tattvas to clear your doubts. You may not be a devotee because you believe the world, you believe you're the body and the world is your enjoyment. Or you may understand that tattva, but you may not be a devotee because you think you're God. Anyway, different tattvas. So this is subjects I always describe that really to believe in God is it's an experience. I do believe faith is like a sense, just like the eyes and the ears. And it's a sense that allows you to experience something beyond your senses. But to be open to that experience, you have to have your doubts cleared, because without faith, one doesn't move in any direction but to speak, try to experience God. So the story is one materialist coming, and by circumstance, he's become interested in spiritual life. And he asked one in the place where he settled, actually after he was cheated out of all his money by his miserly sons, who just took his character. He was such a miser that he never extended himself to serve the Vaishnavas because he didn't want to spend any money that could not be used for his own ego and aggrandizement. Miser means kripana. You don't see the broad picture. So his sons became like him and eventually stole his money and then his wife was formed when they were on some kind of pilgrimage. They basically destitute, managed to scrap by, and they became attached to one Brahmin named Yadava. And this Chandidas, who is this materialist, was getting some sense of transcendence, some sense that there has to be some purpose higher than just eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may die. So he really wanted to understand, what is this material existence? The Yadava takes him to Godhum, one of the nine islands of Navadvip, Mayapur, where we've been following. A lot of this dialogue happens when somehow or other, by good fortune, people wind up in this place of these renounced Babaji's who live in the forest bowers of this beautiful place and have their ashram. And that is good fortune. Somehow or other, when you are ready, somehow or other, in God's infinite plan to purify us by this material existence and to purify us by the law of karma, somehow or other, all this purification is subtly gearing our consciousness, because it has to inspire our choices that affect our consciousness. And to inspire our consciousness to somehow or other be receptive to the grace of the sadhu. Somehow or other, this world is meant to bring us to a platform of humility, which means we don't have to be the center of existence, and our authority doesn't have to rule us. But there's a truth higher than us that we will acquiesce to. Somehow or other, we have to come to that point, and that's what we're struggling with. But when we come to that point, and we are ready for that point, by God's grace, he may send us a guru, he may send us a teacher, he may send us a Vaishnav. So somehow or other, and we can't really understand because karma is so intricate, but there is a moment where Krishna puts us in contact with the Vaishnavas at a point where somehow or other in our frame of reference, we open up our hearts to appreciate devotees. And that only happens by our previous connection with them, knowingly or unknowingly. We're opened up to to receive that. And that's called shraddha. That's called faith and appreciation. So somehow or other, God may direct at the right time, either at the right time to get the Sukriti so that we can actually open our hearts fully in the future, or we have the Sukriti and God moves us at the right time to open us our hearts to that experience of sublimity when we receive transcendence without offense. So somehow this dialogue is going on, and we're up to this part of the dialogue where Anantadas Babaji explains that how this material world, how people get covered in this material world by illusion, but there are pure entities in this world. There are pure souls. And then Yadava, the Brahmin who's engaged in this dialogue, he wants to know how can one be pure if they're in this world? How can one be pure if they're in this world? And he mentions and he explains the whole and how there are different types of people that have spiritual insight, but how the highest is the devotee. And then Ananta tells him that one, there are people who can remain in the world, but their existence is different. And it's going to be explained. The senses contact the sense objects, but there are certain people in the world who contact the sense objects in a mood of service. So they're contacting the sense objects brings their consciousness internal. Because once you get in the mood of service, you begin to reflect on yourself. And spiritual life, spiritual perfection means to dwell in the self, to dwell in the soul. So for the Vaishnavas, for the Bhaktas, dwelling in the soul means to live in our humility, our gratitude, and our service. To actually feel that and reflect on that. Not our entitlement, our pride, and our enjoyment. Because that brings our consciousness away from the soul and into the illusion of the world, which is called ego. And the context of the objects bring us further in that illusion. Because they reinforce the concept that I am the enjoyer, I am entitled. But one who is a bhakta, a devotee, even though he's in that earthly existence, everything he sees awakens the soul. Prabhupada said that actually a Vaishnava is thrilled at every moment. Why is he thrilled? Because everything is inspiring him to service. So, this Ananta mentioned that there's different types of Vaishnavas and Yadav inquires. You mentioned that there are, you can live in two conditions. In spiritual insight. And Ananta said, yes, you can either be married or you can be renounced. But you can still have that perspective of how you deal with the world. One who is a grihastha, he may be dealing more with the objects of the senses, but still his consciousness is reflected inward in how he views the things that he's contacting. There may have been an initial need or desire to contact the sense objects. But as he becomes purified, everything he sees begins to reflect on the soul, because he sees things in relationship to service. So seeing things in relationship to service is self-realization, because what we are servants. So if we see things in relationship to service, we are reflecting on the self. It's a very inner consciousness. Even though we are engaged with the world, the consciousness is very inner. Then Yadavan says, we'll describe the nature of the Grihastha Bhakta. And this is where Ananta says, there's sense objects. We have senses. So we contact the world through the senses. And but the devotee can possess the objects without being attached to them because he sees them as Krishna's. And when you see the world as Krishna, there is no Maya. Because the illusion of the world is that it's not Krishna's. So one who's intensely engaged in service, he has a completely different vision of the world. He contacts the objects, but they don't bring him out of the self, the concept, I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. And generally, objects do that. Because objects are in the modes. So they have different shapes and forms for us to enjoy and to inspire us in that way. But when you're a devotee, it's not that the objects impact your consciousness impacts the objects. That's God's. That's meant for God's service. And therefore, the devotee is tasting such fine foodstuff, but only as prasad, how Krishna is enjoying. He's smelling so many beautiful fragrances, and he's thinking how Krishna is enjoying. The sense object inspires love, and therefore brings it into the soul. So there, as he's explaining, yes, they are an earthly existence, but there's these types of people that their consciousness is completely different. They're liberated, even in this world. So then Yadava, so he understands now, okay, there can be married people, right? And they can be Vaishnavas. But still, they have so many social obligations. And the social obligations are governed by smarta brahmins, the people who know the various mantra tantra. So karma, nipano, vipra, mantra tantra, visharda, vaishnava, vo, guru nisyat, vaishnava, swapachoguru. So karma, nipano, vipra, one must know all the various karmas. Mantra, tantra, vishara, you know mantra, you know tantra. A Vaishnava guru nisyat. He's not humble. If he doesn't recognize something higher than himself, he's not a Vaishnava. Can't be a guru. Swapacho, Vaishnava. A Vaishnava, what is it? A Vaishnava, Guru Nisyat. But if he's a Vaishnava, even a family of donkey, he can be Guru. So, it all depends on how you interact with the world. So he said, yes, you need to carry out the social conventions. It doesn't have to cover bhakti. Because you're here in the world as a grihastha, there are certain social obligations which if you don't perform, societies at a certain level of consciousness will reflect badly on you. They may even have ill impressions of Vaishnavas. If Vaishnavas in family situations don't perform the right rituals or the right social objection, he said, but not Kanya karma, not those rituals that are purely for sense gratification. They don't engage in those. And then he says, but then why do some, if you can contact the world, right, in a spiritual way that impacts your consciousness for service, which is the nature of the soul, then why do some grihasthas renounce the world? So he said that's rare. And it has to do with a tendency that they have. It has to do with the tendency that they have. The tendency for renunciation is not itself spiritual elevation. Spiritual elevation is devotion. So that's not spiritual elevation in itself. It's a very subtle point. We have to listen. But that tendency to withdraw the senses for one who has legitimately become detached can be a facility for devotional service. Because he gets less absorbed, less distracted in duties. It can be. So he describes it, that outward tendency. One may have that outward tendency to enjoy the objects. And but because he's a Vaishnava, that tendency is converted into service. The outward tendency is converted into service. But as one is purified by service, then the outward tendency itself is reduced. One is no longer seeking the objects for enjoyment, which are dovetailed in Krishna consciousness, but he loses attraction for the objects themselves. So such a person, he may be better facilitated. It's not absolutely necessary, but he may be better facilitated in the renounced order. Then he asks, well, what are the symptoms of that person who is given up household life? And then it's described. He's very, very Yeah, well, first of all, they're completely free from the desire to associate with the opposite sex. They have unrestricted mercy towards all living entities. They're completely indifferent towards the endeavors to accumulate wealth. They only strive in times of need for food and clothing. And they have unconditional love for Krishna. And such persons, they can, are the symptoms of one who's in the Grihastha Bhakta. Or when these symptoms, he is no longer suited for engagements in karma, even though as a Grihastha, he can completely spiritualize them, but he's no longer required. And as he's no longer required, some of those Grihastha Bhaktis, they renounce the world. And for them, that's a facility for their devotional service. Because even though you're purifying material activities, you're still engaged in them. So you can engage more in chanting and hearing and things like that. So and then and then he keeps on asking relevant questions. He asks, what is real renunciation and what is false renunciation. And real renunciation is so firm it cannot be broken at any time. And false renunciation arises from the, in other words, you renounce, but it's not that you're indifferent to the sense objects. But because of, you know, some deception or some prestige, you renounce the world. But that doesn't last because the cause is external to your own consciousness. And therefore, in the, I read this book, I have this book called The Ladder of Divine Descent. And in this ladder, it's how to be a renunciate in the 13th century to the Christian, you know, the desert monks, they would renounce the world. So it would describe that people were in monasteries, and they were very, very renounced. Then they were recommended to go to the forest. But their renunciation was completely because it was respected in the institution. And when they went outside and they weren't watered, the renunciation wasn't watered by their false prestige, then there was no basis for it. And then they would become materialists. They would see this many, many times. A person would be renounced when he'd be in an institution, a monastery. And he would be respected. So he would think, oh, now let me go to the forest. I'll go to the higher stage of renunciation. But then when he's alone and there's no prestigious value, your renunciation is before the eyes of God, then it's given up. It's given up because you don't, and so that's false renunciation. But real renunciation is, it's not motivated externally. There's something in the consciousness, some jnana, some understanding, and a lack of attraction for. It's not just you're detached from objects, because detached from objects means you can just remain aloof from them, but be attracted. That's one type of renunciation. I'm attracted, but I understand this is not good for me, so I stay at distance. The higher form of renunciation is you're not interested. And in bhakti, when one gets to the platform of bhava, one of the nine symptoms of bhava is viraktir. And it's called indifference. You actually have bhava, you actually have love in your heart, and you're indifferent to the world. You're not attracted to the world. It's not you're staying aloof from the world. And then Yadava says, okay, a bhakta who takes the renounced order, should he adopt the external do they accept the external dress of renunciate? We saw at the very beginning that there's such a tendency to think that the cloth is the renunciation rather than the consciousness which one wears it. So they're very, very careful in Vaishnava Sangha to stress the consciousness and not the change of dress. And therefore we see in this initially the guru would not let the disciple change his dress to a sannyasi until he was sure that it was indicative of his consciousness. And when it was indicative of his consciousness, then they may adopt different items to identify them at the renounced order. And that association helps them to strengthen their resolve because they take a vow in the presence of other Vaishnavas. So it represents something. It represents your obligations. It represents your duties. And now you're identified publicly by that. So that can help one's renunciation. And he explained it's helpful to be identified in that culture. A renunciate's family members will no longer maintain any relationship. I'm finished. I've taken this vow. Get off the mental plane. Don't try to get me back. Sometimes in the present thing, someone says, well, if I wear white, then the girls will think I'm eligible, but let me just wear saffron. That will announce to the ladies I'm not interested. But if your consciousness is not changed, then you'll be interested. And then the ladies will know that you're interested. And then you'll make a sham of the order. So, and then there's certain social restrictions because you wear the dress, you have the rod. But it's just a facility to the inner consciousness inside. It's not the inner it's not that you dress some way and that's what you are. You are something and therefore that's the way you dress. And therefore it's beneficial. But it may not be necessary, he says, if one's fully detached from household life. He may even stay in the household. Sometimes it's even less advanced. I'm taking this because I have attachments, but I'm making a vow and I want to be free from the interactions. But someone may be so advanced, he may be detached in household life. So there's generally no injunction that a devotee has to take. Only the injunction is for some public consideration or some dependency. If some dependence on public consideration is something, then you have to take if you really want. But if there's no problem like that, you can either stay at home or take it. And all Lord Chaitanya's disciples were fully liberated, and most of them were grihasthas, married group. So he says, well, who should one take the renounced order from? And even if your guru is not a renunciate, you can take sannyas from your guru. And the principle is, if you instruct others in religious principles that you do not follow, it brings you to renunciation, ruination, not renunciation. So the guru may be a grihastha, but he's still living with his wife, and he's still with his family, and he may be very renounced. That he can't perform a function if he's not himself following those principles. And it's just a basic principle in spiritual life. You can't instruct people unless you are following yourself. And this is vanashram. It's not bhakti. It's a social consideration to facilitate bhakti. Not bhakti in itself, because one could be in any ashram and be a Mahabhagama. And one can be in any ashram and have no bhakti at all. But it doesn't mean that certain stages and orders of life for a particular person are not serve as a facility for bhakti. And then what are the criteria that a guru should use for what are the criteria a guru should use? So you should look at the Grihastha and see whether on the strength of his bhakti he has acquired a spiritual temperament characterized by qualities, this is of full control of the mind and senses, and has the hankering for wealth and the satisfaction of the tongue been uprooted or not. And the guru should keep the disciple and examine him for some time thoroughly. And then he may decide this person is suitable. And under no circumstance should he offer initiation into the renunciate prior to this. And if he does, then he endangers his own spiritual life. Because he becomes responsible. He becomes responsible for that person. So if he initiates someone and then that person falters, obviously he is responsible because he is the one that made the judgment and test. So now Yadava says, oh, I see, it's not a light matter, except they're in that sort of serious. And how unqualified gurus are turning this practice into a common affair, and it's going to cause disaster. Prabhupada said that my godbrothers criticized me in many ways, but one thing they were right. He said, I gave sannyas to unqualified young men. He said, but what could I do when there are no trees in the forest? The poplar or castor oil tree looks big. It's a small little tree. But what can I do? The social organization and to invest people in confidence and authority to organize my society, I gave sannyas. But I see it was a mistake. There used to be a picture in Prabhupada's room, Prabhupada on the stairs of the Krishna Balaram Mandir with his 25 sannyasis. Then someone took the picture down. And it disappeared. And I can understand it must have been one of those people who fell down. Now, if I was a detective and find out who it was, it would be really hard because every single person in that picture fell down. Or at least 75-80% or more were not there. So Prabhupada said, so here it's warning. It's warning. And then Anantadas says how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu severely punished Chota Haridas for a small fault just to keep up the sanctity of this order. Because so many people, even in Lord Chaitanya's time, were taking the order for the wrong purpose. What to speak of today? And he says, is it proper to construct a monastery and establish the worship of deity after one has entered the renounced order? He says, no. A real renunciate should maintain his existence by begging. You should not be involved in such grand enterprises, constructing temples. You can live anywhere, in a secluded hut or a temple of a householder. He should remain aloof from affairs that require money, and he should constantly chant Sri Harinam without offense. So this is the principle, and it's very, very serious. It's very, very serious, and this is the principle. Of course, that restriction, when it's discussed in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the commentator by Jiva Goswami is, yes, because all these things, disciples, building temples, reading books, writing books, can so easily be appropriated to the false ego. So easily invoke in one the enjoying spirit. But for the purpose of serving Krishna, a Vaishnava sannyasi may do these things. In fact, it's his duty to increase the sampradaya and make disciples, it says. He has to print books for the education of people. He does build temples. But we have to be very careful what motive we do these things for. Because it's so easy to build a temple as a monument to your own ego. It's so easy to publish a book as a monument to your own ego. It's so easy to take disciples as a monument to your own ego. Therefore, the restriction is there. And in this particular culture, it wasn't that sannyas was given because it was respected in society, and therefore to create a preaching society, people take sannyas. It was part of the social culture. The society was already established. It was part of a social culture. People would, they would be part of their social development. Now it's only if you are preaching. Otherwise, it's not necessary. But in a social way, one may do it. For, you know, that's part of the development of society, so you can do that. And because that was the main function in days of yore, the whole order was based on the opulence of renunciation, aloofness from objects. And therefore, the grihasthas wouldn't initiate people. They would build the temples. They would write the books. Monks wouldn't do those things. But Rupa Goswami, when they came to Vrindavan to establish Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, they saw we need to build temples. We need to excavate holy places. We need to write books. We need to have libraries to study books. Therefore, they weren't sitting down and just chanting all day. They were clearing out forests and helping build roads so people can bring in the materials and bring in the books. So it discusses these tattvas. It's very interesting. So we're discussing the tattva of renunciation. And just to summarize that, although vairagya is not the symptom of devotion, as one advances in Krishna consciousness, he naturally becomes less attached to the objects of the senses. And when he becomes mature in that, to facilitate his service and his death, he may give up all external karma. Or if he's very advanced, he may stay within it. So it was expected that a renunciate, being freed from all material obligations, his duty was just to chant constantly. And it's such an important duty to chant constantly, because it puts within society people of spiritual attainment. And that inspires the society that practices Krishna consciousness, even if for you, Krishna consciousness means working in the world. So it's important, and certain people find the karma that I am free. And then sometimes naturally, Prabhupada preached, they want to preach, and then Krishna may not give them. And after a while, I tell them sometimes, maybe be a friend or something, your job is to sit and chant Hare Krishna. Prabhupada said the perfection of the Hare Krishna movement is sitting down in Mayapur and chanting 64 rounds a day. So Prabhupada was not against chanting Hare Krishna and then you just have to be qualified. What do you call renunciates who set up a monastery and then live like the householders? You build a temple for Krishna, but it becomes your palace. And Ananta Das says they may be called vantasi, those who eat their own vomit. Vantasi. The sannyasi who's enjoying a grihastha ashram and then gives it up for renunciation and then enters back again, it's called vantasi. Vantasi, why? Because he's enjoying the same thing he gave up, just like a person who gives up. So, yes. But on the other hand, actually, recently I read today in the paper that one of Prabhupada's disciples, I read in the news, one of Prabhupada's disciples just passed away, and his name was Madhavis, and he was called the Emperor of Kirtan. And when I first came to the temple in San Francisco in 1974, or 1970, he was there as the president. When I visited, and he took us out on Harinam, and he was called the Emperor of Kirtan, even though he didn't really have such a good voice. He didn't have a great voice, but he had so much bhakti, and he was so kind-hearted, and very, very dynamic. And then I remember how he put the people in lines, and he was very athletic. He would dance before everyone. And his tunes were what I call simple and patriotic. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And then, you know, he was very like, came from Boston, Irish guy from Boston, so he was built like a hockey player, very strong chest. And Prabhupada loved him so much, and that's what you love is love, not control of the senses. But control of the senses, if it's a manifestation of love. So it's attractive to Krishna, is our love. And the love has certain symptoms, including detachment, but it's the love. So he couldn't maintain his sannyas. And then people spread it around, and Prabhupada was very upset. So it would ruin his reputation and force him to go away, which it did for a while. And then Prabhupada wrote a purport about it, and he described Gajendra the elephant, and Gajendra the elephant fighting with the crocodile, and the crocodile was winning because it got him in the water, So Prabhupada used that analogy that we can defeat something, we can be strong against Maya if we're situated in the right place. The crocodile is an aquatic. So in the same way, a grihastha, or someone who's attached, if he's situated in a platform where the attachments can be reasonably satisfied, then he's in his position of strength. And if he's not, even though he may be so strong, he's like the elephant in water. He'll be easily dragged down. So he said, no, let the person marry. And you know, in the bhakti tradition, the important thing is one's service and devotion. So it's very interesting how they discuss this here. Great soul, Madhavis, so kind-hearted, really. Yeah, but then they are no longer considered to be Vaishnavas. Ananta Das said, what is the benefit in their association when they act contrary to Shastra and Vaishnav Dharma? They've given up pure bhakti and adopted a hypocritical lifestyle. What relationship could a Vaishnav have with such people? So the hypocrisy is they're in the renounced order, but they're living like grihasthas. See, if one is a grihastha, married person, then you have the allowance for some type of enjoyment. But you perform the austerity of living with your wife. But if the sannyasi takes too much material facility, without that austerity of family, then he won't be purified. So here, that's what's called vantasi, not just giving that up and getting married, but keeping your dress and eating the same thing you gave up. And bhakti is based on honesty. Bhakti is honesty, because it's serving Krishna. It's serving Krishna because you want Krishna pleased, not serving Krishna so you can get something for yourself. Bhakti is sincerity. It's honesty. Okay, are there any questions? Anybody have any questions? Anybody else like to say hello?
Hi, this is Atmananda.
Atmananda, Hare Bo. I got your letter after I spoke to you. You said you weren't free in the morning, but I got that letter afterwards and I called you. Okay, thank you, Atmananda, for coming on. Great.
Thank you.
Anybody else like to say hello today? Okay, we can end today.